Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, and today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Dana Christian Lee. Dana Christian Lee is a mom of two amazing humans, William John III and Grace Christian. Originally from Michigan, they headed west for her daughter to attend college in Northern California 5 years ago and have found California to be their soul's home. Dana holds 2 degrees in education, as well as certification in yoga and mindfulness. She has been a teacher for over 25 years in elementary middle schools, religious education programs, as well as yoga and mindfulness teaching. Her passion is physical and mental well-being in community, offering access to resources, tools, and connection. In January of 2023, Dana's journey with Tell My Story began in partnership with Jason Reed. Tell My Story is a nonprofit whose mission is to help parents own their kids' mental health like they do their physical health through film, music, and meaningful communication. Dana, the executive director of Tell My Story, works daily to positively impact youth mental health nationally and globally. Dana, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. It's a pleasure having you on the program today.
Good morning. Hi.
We met, I believe it was through the ultimate matchmaker in podcasting, Steve Ramona. Yes. Yeah, he's great. And Steve emailed me and said, Dana's got a heck of a story. She's got a heck of a journey. I think she'd be a great fit for your podcast. I listened to the episode that you did with Steve, found out what your passion is, particularly with youth mental health, and with somebody who works very closely with college students every day. I'm very sensitive to the issues that they present as far as mental health challenges. And with your passion and also Jason Reed's passion, the two of you together just picked my interest. And I said, yeah, I got to have you on the podcast. So here we are.
I'm so grateful that Steve connected us and to see where this conversation leads and how we can stay connected over time to do some really powerful work.
I second all of that. My first question, Dana, is tell our audience about the experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions.
There's a few major touchstones. I'll speak directly to my own mental well-being and my own physical well-being, and then how it weaves now into where I am. As a young person, I did not understand that my eating disordered way of being started in middle school and then into high school was a mental health issue. I thought I was just a perfectionist who was trying to control her weight for dance and vanity purposes, being a teenage girl and always striving to be the best I can be. I took all of that to the extreme and struggled mightily through almost the end of college. I got a lot of good help, but I still did dabble in the eating disordered way. And like alcoholism, eating disorders are something that you work with for your life. Long process, because you can fall back, you know, and I haven't had the perfect journey of complete no relapse, but it's been a pretty solid moving forward once I found the practices of meditation and yoga. Those combined really helped me on that healing journey to honor myself and my body as a temple and to honor my life as a gift and work with that on a daily basis, work with my mind and my body together. Had 2 children suffered postpartum depression mightily. So that was another facet of my own mental health that like got peaked in a new way. And I was like, wow, didn't I already like deal with all this? And then it came back again. And so I have a lot of experience working with the mind and the body in my own past. And then fast forward to children growing up, both of my kids plus myself have lost really close loved ones to suicide and to addiction that has led to suicide. It's really shaped the trajectory of how I think, how I live, how I teach, and how I show up in the world, which is a lot of compassion, knowing everybody struggles. And so all of that has woven me into meeting Jay in the end of 2022. We were connected, had two Zoom calls, and I was like, I'm in. And once Jay told me his story about losing his son, what he's trying to do with Tell My Story and Mental Wellness Media, I was just 100% on board. So I left all the work that I was doing besides still teaching yoga and mindfulness, but I was working in churches, working with kids, youth, and families, always touching base, always on the pulse of young people and watching the struggles throughout COVID shift the narrative around mental health too and amplify the need. So when I started with Jay, it was really important to me because I want to leave a legacy for the world that says you matter, your story matters. And even if it's not pretty, that's when we really need to reach out and tell it to someone because we don't ever know what someone is dealing with. They can look perfect on the outside. The inside can be kind of, you know, an upheaval that we don't even know. So that's just a little dose of my background that brought me where I am today.
There are quite a couple of different things that stuck out. I think one is that you're affected by both eating disorders and suicide, loss of several friends of suicide. Both of these are which are stigmatized and almost a taboo order, you know, taboo topics to talk about. But what it also seemed to make sense to me that you gravitated to movement therapy such as yoga, because I know the Renfro Center in Philadelphia deals with, like, I think young adults that have eating disorders, and part of the therapy is they do dance therapy, and I think they do other types of movement therapies that have been proven to be very effective in conjunction with other therapies to working with individuals with eating disorders. So it doesn't surprise me that you gravitated to yoga. You became a certified yoga teacher, and that's part of your passion. And today, and as far as leaving a legacy, I think you've already got a good start to just with the work you're doing with Jason, with the work you're doing on your own, with your commitment to young adults. So I think even if you stop today, and I know you're not going to stop today, you would have left a legacy that your future descendants, your children would be very proud of at this point.
Yeah. And I think of my children consistently every day and the friends that they've lost. I knew them personally. My son's roommate in college on the basketball team took his life behind their dorm. They have a train, and my son had to hear that train the rest of his college career. And every time think of his friend, and it was beyond tragic. And so I think of Zach a lot. I think of my daughter's friends that have struggled mightily. And in high school, she lost a friend. I think of my own friends regularly, Jay's son, Ryan. That is why Tell My Story exists. And Ryan took his life at 14. That is so, so young, where you should just be, you know, loving life a little bit more every day, becoming who you are. And when it's so overwhelming that a young person feels like they can't continue, that's just heartbreaking and catalyzing in the same breath, right? So that's what keeps me breathing and staying in this space, staying in this work, because it's challenging work. The thing that I've learned is to stay in this space, not only the movement therapy, not only like talk therapy, but like the meditation, like really knowing my own mind, working with that is what can help. Because with anything, you know, Jay in our film says to the parents, you know, you got to put your own oxygen mask on first. We need to know how to take care of ourselves as adults, because we set the tone for the world, for our nation, for our homes, by our own individual thoughts and deeds. So I take that very seriously on a daily basis. And I hope that more people can start to understand that they set the tone for their young kids.
Yeah, and particularly, we need to be good role models. And that's, I know, sometimes an overused term for our kids. We need to be able to create an atmosphere where they know it is okay to come and talk to us about any problem that they're experiencing, that we're going to be there, we're going to love them unconditionally, that their problems don't define their self-worth. And we need to be able to create that very safe, welcoming space for them to be able to talk. And even though, as we know, Dana, a lot of young adults will prefer to work out their problems with their peer groups, because sometimes they'll get the message there, well, you know, we don't want to burden our parents, but the parents are the ones that really want to be able to help. It's just, how do I create that space without infringing on their own right to be individuals or their desire to be individuals? But we throw out the carpet. We just say, I'm here anytime you need to talk. We check, we make sure that they're doing okay, that we're thinking about them. And I think that gradually sets the tone where they're going to come and have a conversation about what's really bothering them.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting. I think it was yesterday I was reading an article that was talking about parents being very not okay when their kids aren't okay, that parents are very affected by the struggles of their kids. And that is the moment when you realize that, to double down on yourself.
Yep.
Because when we freak out, or when we have anxiety, or that's visible to our kids, that's very unsettling. So for us to do our best to stay calm and to stay level-headed, that's really a gift that we can give our kids.
Well, particularly since a lot of young adults struggle with depression, they struggle with anxiety. If we come across as being really anxious and being really hyper, they're going to feed into that. And that's going to magnify any crisis of anxiety or depression because of how we react. So we need to stay calm. We need to be very measured, very level-headed, because if we're calm, they're going to respond to that and their anxiety will probably just come down a couple of notches. But if we match that, they're going to become more anxious.
Yeah. And, you know, young people in particular sense stress intuitively. Mm-hmm. They can feel it. They resonate with it. So if we can remember that too, like, I work on that daily, like, how am I feeling? Can I shift it to be soft and calm and grounded?
Yeah.
And then smile, even if it's a challenging day, to be a presence that is comforting.
We may not know what to say, but we may not need to say anything. All we need to do is hold that space for them so that they can be whatever they need to be in that moment and feel safe doing it.
Yep. There's a saying that when people struggle, asking them, do you need to be heard, held, or helped?
Yep.
Like, do you just need to be quiet and get a hug? Yep. Do I just need to listen? Mm-hmm. Or can I actively do something for you? Mm-hmm. But oftentimes parents, and not to pigeonhole men, but there's often a fix it. You know, what can I do to fix it? Instead of just offering presence, calm, open-hearted presence, and then a listening ear. And it's not faulting anyone, because wanting to help somebody by solving a problem is a beautiful intention. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people that struggle don't know what they need.
Yep. And particularly if they're in crisis, it does require a more directive approach anyway, where we have to basically, what resources can we offer to help them manage the crisis? But we also have to empower them in the process to choose which way they want to go. But we need to offer them resources in probably a more directive fashion than we would normally, because any good relationship, therapeutic relationship, is collaborative.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. The collaboration is key. And also the knowing and understanding as best one can, because we don't want it to get to a crisis, like you said. Like, we want to be able to get upstream of the problem instead of like a downstream consequence. So knowing the signs, knowing what to look for, paying close attention are key to getting help early. And all kids struggle, you know, they do. However, the difference is knowing what's healthy, and then what's sending them on a downward trajectory, if you will, where the resources and the support can come in, because hope is what the kids need. and they need to know that they can find that within themselves.
Absolutely. And if anybody, a young adult, older adult, middle-aged adult, they're coming to talk to somebody and they're saying they're thinking of completing suicide or attempting suicide, what they want for that particular moment is talk me out of it.
Yeah.
I'm being vulnerable enough to share this with you. Give me a reason to live. Give me a reason that I should go on even for another day. So I tell my students, when somebody comes to you and they're talking about harming themselves, they want you to give them a reason to continue to go on. And also look at that as the ultimate gift, because they're trusting you in their greatest moment of vulnerability. You know, they're trusting that you are going to provide some pathway for them to continue to strive to live one more day.
Yep. And that can feel like a really big responsibility, particularly to a young person. If somebody comes to you as a young person and says, I'm struggling, I'm thinking I'm having suicidal thoughts, or I'm self-harming, that kind of thing. And for a young person to take responsibility for that isn't necessarily what's being asked of young people. So that's what we're really trying to communicate, is hear that person, tell them you value their friendship, you care about them so much, and listen, but then also say, how can we get you connected for some help? And I want to do this with you, instead of having to take responsibility to do it for them, because that's a lot for a young person. But we do want those kids to tell someone, a trusted adult, because then we can get into action sooner and lose fewer lives.
Yeah.
It is a call for help.
I also tell my students, if we take a look at the philosophy of Ram Dass, Ram Dass has said, we're all just walking each other home.
Yep.
And if you look at everyone who comes to you for help, you're just walking them home, and home can be to a greater light, a greater path, a greater hope. Home can be defined any way that person chooses to see it, but we're walking the path with them, not for them, but with them.
No, definitely. It's to the path of your own heart almost, right? Like, the goodness resides within you, that you don't need to change anything. As you are beautiful, you are beloved, you are magnificent, and your life is a gift. And that's what we forget, because we externalize and we think with our minds. And Ram Dass was consistently saying, you know, use your heart mind to look into the world. And that's tough for young people, but just reminding them that they're good. Showing them, you know, I see you, I see the growth, even if it's not perfection. Applaud small efforts, you know, get on their level. I heard a teaching story this weekend. I went to a silent retreat, and one of the Dharma talks that they gave was working with people that struggle. So imagine someone you love digging a hole and going in it, right? And they're just sitting down there trying to hide from the world, struggling and suffering and not climbing out of this hole. So how do we meet people? Think about somebody that might be shelterless, asking for money. How do we meet them, right? Do we look past them? And so he said, think of someone in there in the hole. Do you stand above on the edge and look down and say, hey, you okay down there? That's sympathy. But then he said, the true test is to get into the hole with them and sit down and be present. And that's empathy.
Absolutely.
So that one really struck me. And then being in this space, I had to follow up with a question later after there was time for questions. And I said, well, what do you do when you work in the space and you feel like the holes are deep and you don't want to get sucked in it so you can't keep going? And he said, climb back out, nourish yourself, ask them if they want to come with you. But you just got to keep doing what fills your heart. With this sense, like you're saying, like the Ram Dass way, the heart mind come together for goodness, for home.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can go back in. So it's not like you stay down there forever.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was a beautiful story. It was very, very easy way to see the difference between sympathy and empathy. And then also to be able to stay on the path when we work with people that are struggling. Even our own family members, even if they don't struggle with a mental health challenge, we all struggle with our minds and our lives, right? Mm-hmm. And our hearts. So I just think that's a beautiful way to look at it.
Absolutely. We all have our own set of challenges that befall us in this lifetime. Our challenges may be different, but I think the ability to show genuine empathy for somebody's struggles, in addition to support resources, a good therapist, and some good holistic treatment methods, all that combination are going to help individuals get through to the other side of tragedy.
Absolutely. And if we can all remember two things, relax, soften as much as you can, and smile.
Mm-hmm.
If we can have a softer energy and a smile, even if we're not feeling super smiley, you don't have to be happy clappy on the inside, but just like this knowing, genuine smile,
mm-hmm.
even to ourselves. But if we can show up in the world and more people had smiles for each other, that small gesture that takes no time, no money, only awareness, that will make you feel better, and it will change somebody's life if you smile at them. You don't know whose life you're impacting by smiling. You know, we don't know whose lives we're going to impact by hearing this conversation that we're having. But mm-hmm. when we show up and we smile and do our lives in this way, big and small, we all can impact this change, add to hope in our world.
Absolutely. And I was smiling just as you were talking about that. And it's true. I think a smile, a gesture of kindness, holding a door open for somebody, you know, saying hello to somebody that you don't know, but just spreading out that good love or good karma, however you choose to conceptualize that, it has a trickle-down effect. And in the world that we're living in now with so much tragedy and so much polarization along so many levels, those are the qualities, love, compassion, presence, empathy, that eventually are going to bring everybody together more so than we are now.
Yeah, a unified world sounds pretty good. You know, one that's grounded in love and respect. And that's the work, right?
Yep. Speaking of work,
to
tell our listeners about the mission of Tell My Story, and how does Mental Wellness Media support Tell My Story's mission?
So Jason Reed is the founder of Mental Wellness Media and Tell My Story. Jay lost his son to suicide at the age of 14. He'll be 21 this year. But when Ryan passed, Jay found two things upon going through his desk and belongings. One was passwords for his online accounts to see where his mindset was at that time. The other one said, "Tell my story." And so Jay is a man who takes action and he takes responsibility. And he's a beautiful human being for both of those really strong characteristics. And he took that to heart and made a film called Tell My Story, a full-length feature documentary about his son Ryan and their family's journey. And the purpose of the film was to help parents not struggle like his family struggled by losing their son. And so Jay made this film. It's beautifully heartbreaking, showed it all around the nation. And when he got to the end of that, said, the story's told. But he uncovered a really big gaping hole in our world, especially in our nation, the mental health of young people. He was like, wow, the work is just beginning. Like, it was like an epiphanal moment for him. And so Mental Wellness Media came out of that over the course of the years. The film that we initially made was an outside production company because Jay just needed to do that. And then he said, I want to start my own. And so Mental Wellness Media was born, and it's a for-profit organization, basically funded fully by Jason. He is passionate about this mission, and this has been his project. And underneath Mental Wellness Media is Tell My Story. That's the nonprofit arm that I run. I'm the executive director, and our mission for Tell My Story is straight from Jason's heart, to help parents own their kids' mental health like they do their physical health. And because that's what Jay is wanting people to know, that he didn't understand at the time. Mm-hmm. He didn't know there was anything wrong. He didn't see any of the signs, and he wants to help people in that way with our organization. So that's how we came about, and that's our mission. And we make documentary films, we make music videos, and we made a card game, a Tell My Story card game. And it's 100 questions to build trust, connection, and heartfelt communication between kids, youth, college-age kids. You and I could play it right now, Dave. It's to get upstream of the problem by just getting into communication about everything that it means to be human. Like, tell me what you love about our family. What's something you've done recently that you're proud of that nobody noticed? Like, so things don't get stuck inside of us and we start to talk. So yeah, we find ways to connect people in communication and then in community around our events and our films, and have people have an opportunity to come together to know they're not alone. And then ask the questions that they need answers to, and to get resources, and just to get a greater sense of we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I like the idea of the Tell My Story card game. I think that's a great way to get young adults involved, educators involved. And young adults like those hands-on action activities, more so than I think talk therapy or in conjunction with talk therapy. I never thought talk therapy by itself was effective in helping young adults find clarity to their own situation. I always thought it was like more hands-on physical activities, interactive activities where they have a chance to discuss, to expand, and that empowers them to really put their best foot forward and realize that they have more to offer the world.
Just finding that power of communication is everything. Like, we need to tell our story. People want to be heard and seen and then validated with their joy, because if you're happy and you have nobody to share it with, that's kind of a bummer too. But if you're having a hard time and you don't feel like you have anywhere to land it. And so I think in a culture that's very online focused, you know, and a lot, I mean, we talk about this all the time, but kids and social media and like just always on the Google, on the phone, there's always something to go into instead of to go out to. We've lost that art of one-on-one eyeball-to-eyeball communication. And that's what this really does, is it brings people together to have a conversation with their kids in the car. It can be, you know, at the dinner table. Therapists use it in their offices. Kids are using it in the classroom with their teachers or counselors. And it seems simple, but it's almost revolutionary right now.
Yeah. And sometimes the simplest things are the most revolutionary or the most impactful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Simplicity is sometimes the key to greater clarity.
And simple is not easy.
To be clear,
simple is harder.
No.
Because we have to go through a lot to distill it down. And when we came up with this card game, it came out of over 100 screenings probably that we had and sat on different youth panels and at different events. And two themes rose up out of it. Young people across the board said, I don't talk to my parents, not because I don't love them or necessarily trust them. It's, I don't want to be a burden. They're stressed out. So that's to the earlier point that we as parents and adults really need to take care of ourselves.
Yep.
And then the parents on the flip side of that coin say, but I can't get my kids to talk to me. So it's like this catch 22 that we're all in. And Jay, being the problem solver that he is, he's like, what are we going to do here? Because this is a problem. And he's willing to put his time and his money behind it. And he has funded the whole of this project. And we're just getting ready to release our Spanish version of the card game now too, which I'm really proud of, because we've only had English up to this point.
And I believe you and Jason's goal is to get these documentaries into the hands of educators, into the hands of human service organizations. So, I mean, that's something I know we talked about during our introductory call. So how does that work? How does, like, say if somebody says, geez, I want to show Tell My Story in the classroom, or the other documentary, What I Wish My Parents Knew.
Yeah, definitely.
How do they do that?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of ways to go about it. We have a student film, so we do show it in schools, and it has to be coordinated and orchestrated very closely between us and the teacher, the counselor, and the school. So it can be done. It's a 30-minute film, and it's paired with a robust discussion after, making sure that the kids have their questions answered, that they're okay, that they know what resources that they have. And then we always end it with playing the game. That, like, really rounds out the situation. So that's how it's used in schools a lot, in the classroom. Some schools have used it in assemblies, which is harder because you have a lot of kids in one space, but it is doable. So if anybody wants that, that's watching, that wants to have it as an educator or a counselor or a principal, and they want to have it for their students, all you got to do is email me at Dana, D-A-N-A, at tellmystory.org. We have the parent or adult resource needed by the schools and also houses of worship, businesses, community centers, social service organizations, Rotary clubs. If you're in any of those, What I Wish My Parents Knew is a great tool So it's a 45-minute film that we would watch in collaboration with a mental health professional of your choosing that would be part of the event, because we want somebody that knows your culture, knows your community, that can be there on the spot to answer any questions, to offer any support. This film is 45 minutes. We pair it with a 45-minute discussion. So it's roughly an hour and a half. And then everybody is able to ask what questions that they have, tell us what they notice. There's a robust conversation that happens after. They're given resources specifically for their area, but also national resources as well, to know where they can go if they or their kids need help. And it's at no charge, but we do it in partnership. You can't just go online, find it, and show it. It doesn't exist online because the content is sensitive and we want it presented in a very mindful way where people feel safe, people feel supported, feeling these big emotions and, you know, seeing things that they're like, maybe, wow, I didn't notice that that could be a sign. And my child has been exhibiting a little bit of that, right? Mm-hmm. So on the spot, if they're realizing that, they're going to want some help with that. What do I do? How do I go home? So those are the conversations that we have. And it's really a beautiful way to have a difficult conversation with support and then tools and empowerment to go back into your life.
Well, you know, the other thing I constantly hear, Dana, is that in colleges across the country, it's not a surprise to me that there's like a two-week waiting list to get in to see anybody.
And that's a long time when you're struggling.
Well, especially when you're thinking of suicide, it's really a long time. And I think, you know, since I've been in the human service field since 1986, and there's always been a resource issue. There's always been more individuals in need of treatment than resources to provide for that. So I think the more that your organization can bridge the gap by providing those additional resources, that's also, I think, going to be a nice complement to a lot of overworked counseling staffs, understaffed counseling staffs that just can't handle the demand for young adults that need treatment. And, you know, we were talking, I think, before we came on camera, I think in one of the documentaries, I think Jason had mentioned that the suicide rate for 10 to 24-year-olds was the second leading cause of death in that age group. I mean, you're talking in college students, that's also, the last I knew, it was like the third leading cause of death among college students. So we're talking about a very serious, not only mental health issue, but a serious social problem that we need to be able to provide as many applicable, sensitive, and thoughtful resources that we can to bridge the gap so that we can help individuals and families get the services that they need.
Absolutely. And I think this film, What I Wish My Parents Knew, is able to be touched by everyone, not only through the lens of a parent to a young person or a young person to themselves, but I've screened this with adults that had memory in that moment. I forgot that I was a cutter when I was in high school.
Yep.
And it brought a memory back to them and they were like, whoa. And so we had to unpack it there, like not in front of people, but they were able to feel that and then after talk to somebody about that and then maybe get a little bit of extra help, because we can all see ourselves through young people, because we were all in high school one time, in middle school one time, have shared experiences. All of these emotions are shared by all of us. Anxiety, depression, fear, guilt, shame, loathing, all of it. But the question becomes, how do we manage the doses? Is the positive emotional side in a deficit? And that's what we're trying to do, is balance those scales so the kids know that these emotions are healthy and they're for a reason. But when we attach to one too deeply.
Yeah. If it impacts our ability to engage in the world, then it becomes a problem.
Yeah. And when we shut down and we're afraid to talk. And then if the resources aren't available, that's where the real tragedy can set in. So, you know, it takes all of us doing this work. What you do in the classroom with your young people is incredible. And it takes conversations like this and joining together of organizations to elevate the mission, the work. And then for us, what's very unique is our screenings. Jay makes these free. If you do a lot of the other screenings, there's, you know, a high screening fee. Schools are losing counseling staff due to budget cuts now because COVID money is gone. We know that a lot of things are shrinking and the problems are getting bigger. So the constraints are changing real time. Here in the state of California, we just finished, you know, the LA fires like actively burning, but but now we've got the after effect that, like COVID, we still don't know all the impacts, right? We've got these fires in California, these kids that experienced COVID, now that they've got like this whole new way of being. And my best friend from high school, she lives in the Palisades, two kids, they lost their home. Yeah. I mean, it's talk about upending. So just knowing that all of the other external issues in our climate and in our communities and in our world are impacting us all. So, and the resources are being stretched.
And I think those type of global tragedies, you talked about the wildfires in Northern California with COVID, they affect young adults as well, too. All of that brings them closer to death than they ever thought possible. And if they're already dealing with pre-existing issues of anxiety, those global issues, if there's not a safe environment for them to talk about the impact, that is going to impact, I believe, their mental health even as significantly as just the day-to-day challenges that they experience with their immediate peers, their families, or other individuals that can trigger bouts of anxiety or depression. So you got all that, plus social media that will show these things constantly, and the glut of misinformation that goes around this. These, I know, are all sources of concern for young adults, and really can, if it isn't, we don't create an environment where we can talk about this, it's going to create such a pervasive sense of hopelessness for those that are already struggling with suicidal ideations, that are struggling with anxiety, that they may see no other solution other than to take their lives. Because get me out of this world. I don't want to be a part of it anymore.
We just want to make sure that people know that that's not an option. Like our world has, you know, almost made it normal. Like that's an option. And no, your life is worth living. That is not the option. Yeah. And it is, you know, attractive to young people because it does seem hopeless. And that's where this conversation really does need to shift, kick into high gear, because everybody needs hope. That's and when an entire community is wiped out, like the Pacific Palisades, for example, the adults are impacted because they not only have to help their kids, they're trying to help themselves and figure out what's next for themselves and their families. So it's not just their kids are struggling in school and everything at home is kind of like status quo, right? There's no home anymore. No. So it's just this, you know, so climate crisis is really a thing that we all have to deal with. You just had wild stuff out east with all of your snow days and, you know, 4 feet of snow in a couple of days. Like, you know, the climate is a wild ride right now. And we all need to, you know, be as healthy as we can to stay present and navigate during those times as well.
Yeah, because if we're not taking care of ourselves, if we're not loving ourselves, we can't take care of ourselves or love anybody else. And particularly for the challenges that we need to be able, as I think as you said, to take care of ourselves so that we can be present for the energy that needs to be compassionately and lovingly dealt with.
Yeah. And to do that requires a lot of resiliency as an adult. Mm-hmm. Young people need resiliency too. But when we're talking about leading a family, especially through a crisis like the Pacific Palisades, that resilience is so necessary. And if you already go into something like that on a deficit, there's a lot of challenge that can arise. So there's so much opportunity to do good. And people that really need extra doses of resource and not just money. Money's good. You know, federal aid is great, but also like emotional resource for sure.
I tell my students that you are going to be the greatest resource to the clients that you serve, not the techniques or the strategies. It's going to be you. It's what you bring to the table with genuineness, with compassion, with love, and with warmth. That's going to build bridges very quickly in your therapeutic relationships, more so than all the technical knowledge you're going to bring to the table.
Absolutely. And also remembering that we're as healthy, I guess, as our network is connected. So if you know you have friends you can go to, family you can go to, mentors, and just know that they're on speed dial kind of, you can send them a text, you can give them a call. Investing in yourself and investing in your relationships in a healthy way cannot be underscored, highlighted enough. that is critical. The relationship piece is what actually, like, is, in my opinion, kind of all you have. Like, when the Pacific Palisades burned down, they only had each other,
mm-hmm.
right? Their whole, everything was gone. So at the end of the day, we have each other. We have our relationships. And that's what gets us through. So I'm so grateful to be connected to you, to have this relationship to the other side of the country, and know that people like you are doing such great work in the world. And, you know, we all need to rise at this time.
Absolutely. And I've always believed that the people that have come into my path, especially the last 22 years of my life, has not been by coincidence. The people that have crossed my path have been the ones that have meant to cross my path. So I feel the same. I'm grateful for the fact that we've connected, and I look forward to future collaboration, you know, with you and with Jason, and let's see where it goes.
I can't wait for you to have him on. It'll be great.
Yeah, that's gonna be next.
Good.
That's gonna be. I'm looking at sometime in April to pin him down long enough to have a conversation with me. So
he's a good man with a big heart and a powerful story.
And that comes out across very, very evidently in the two documentaries and in What I Wish My Parents Knew and Tell My Story. He's a very powerful presence. He's a man on a mission. And
he's a man of his integrity, you know,
yep.
And he's really good talking to other men, because men have a harder time across the board talking mm-hmm. about feelings. Jay is really good at just making it real.
Yep.
He's just a real man. He's a real dad. He's into business. You know, like, that's what he does. He also has this deeper layer of himself that he
yep.
brings to the table in a very accessible way for people. And
mm-hmm.
I'm so honored that I get to work with him in this way and to know him as a human being and watch him evolve and watch his family continue to heal after such tragedy. And finding, you know, for Jay, the lives that he's been able to touch is immeasurable. So I'm just really grateful.
One of my last questions for you today, Dana, is if you could leave our listeners with one thing, what would that be?
Today, I would say soften and smile. That was my big teaching this weekend. Soften your negative talk to yourself. Soften your stress. Just exhale and let everything just settle.
Mm-hmm.
And then put a smile just as softly as you can on your face, even if you're struggling, even if you're mightily in it. And those two things put together with a nice, full, deep breath in and out, that is revolutionary. That will change you from the inside out. And for me to find that this weekend, I had to close my eyes and be hours and hours and hours and hours of silent meditation to bring across something that is so powerful and so simple. And I would couple that with my favorite poet, Rumi. He's one of my favorite poets. And he says, close your eyes, fall in love, stay there. And know that the gift is within you. The truth is within you. The healer is within you. Reach out for help, but also know that your heart is resilient. Your heart, your body, your mind are here to support you. And
mm-hmm.
so that's what I would say. And then reach out, please, to me. If any of this resonates, Dana, D-A-N-A, at tellmystory.org. We would love to connect with you and partner with you to bring an event to your business or your school or your house of worship. If you feel like this is important, to see how we can align, because it takes all of us together joining arms and saying, you know, this is collective. We are one, and together we must step forward with that, you know, getting in the hole with the person. Like, we're
mm-hmm.
all on this earth together. So let's go.
That's a great message to leave our audience with. And I will make sure that your email address, along with the Tell My Story website and any other website information that you deem as relevant, we'll just put that in the episode notes, both for the YouTube version and for the audio version. So, Dana, thank you so much for spending time with me today. I truly enjoyed our conversation. I know we're going to be doing this again in the future.
I'll very much look forward to it. Thank you for your good work in the world.
Likewise. And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. wishing you peace.